President Trump's former top student loan official is calling for most of the nation's outstanding student debt to be forgiven.
He's basically saying he would support a plan to forgive $50,000 for anyone who owes student debt in the U.S.
And women are finding it difficult to advance to higher-level jobs in healthcare.
Part of the problem is that a lot of the women in healthcare in those entry-level jobs, in many cases, those are jobs with very little upward mobility. So there isn't necessarily a natural path to management. That's why companies really have to be intentional about it.
It's Thursday, October 24th. This is the AM edition of What's News from the Wall Street Journal. I'm Charlie Turner in New York. We'll have those stories in a moment. First, here are some other stories we're following. We're in the thick of third-quarter earnings season, and one closely watched company reported late Wednesday. That was Tesla. The electric vehicle maker reported a surprise profit after two consecutive quarterly losses. The Wall Street Journal's Robert Wall on the importance of Tesla going back in the black.
Tesla is in this fascinating phase where it's trying to turn itself from a niche electric car maker into a mass market producer with the Model 3 and then also the Model Y that is supposed to come next year. And doing so has been costly, and therefore they've had quarter after quarter, most quarters, they've been loss making. So being able to produce a profit here is maybe some sign, or is being seen as a sign, that they can actually become a regular car maker effectively, someone that produces a large number of vehicles and does so at a profit.
Wall adds that a profit for Tesla should be approached with caution since the car maker has suffered a string of losses. Republicans on Capitol Hill Wednesday amped up their complaints about the closed-door nature of the House's impeachment inquiry. Roughly two dozen lawmakers stormed into a secure meeting room over the objections of Democrats and delaying by several hours the testimony of a Pentagon witness. The Wall Street Journal's Andy Durin has more.
Republicans for several weeks now have been making this argument that the impeachment inquiry that Democrats are conducting in the House is opaque, mysterious, and is not following what they say should be the procedures for such an investigation, that they're not allowing President Trump and the White House to respond to some of these criticisms. And basically, they spent a lot of time attacking the process for how Democrats are going about the investigation.
Durin adds that Wednesday's incident was the most visible manifestation of that criticism. The Wall Street Journal says Mark Fortner, a former senior Boeing pilot, complained years ago that he felt pressure from management to ensure the 737 MAX jet wouldn't require expensive pilot training. That's according to former colleagues. An FBI interview with one of Mr. Fortner's fellow pilots at the time is part of the widening Justice Department probe into how the MAX was designed and certified as safe by the FAA, and whether Boeing officials may have misled regulators as part of that process. The MAX remains grounded after two crashes in the last year killed nearly 350 people. The Trump administration's former top student loan official said he will resign today and immediately call for canceling most of the nation's outstanding $1.5 trillion student debt. Wayne Johnson's actions are part of a campaign to run for U.S. Senate. Joining us with this Wall Street Journal exclusive is the Journal's Josh Mitchell. Josh, who is Wayne Johnson?
Well, Wayne Johnson was tapped by Betsy DeVos in 2017 to oversee the student loan portfolio. At the time, he was hired as the COO. And so he basically oversaw this program. After about 7 months, he moved into a new role with the program, but he's basically been one of the top officials overseeing student loans at the Education Department over the past 2 years.
So now he plans to quit. He's going to run for senator from Georgia as a GOP candidate next year?
Yes. That seat is being vacated by Johnny Isaacson. He's a Republican who's stepping down at the end of the year for health reasons.
What is Wayne Johnson's plan for eliminating student debt, as well as his reasoning?
So Wayne Johnson it's interesting because he's running as a Republican, but his plan to cancel student debt is actually going further than what even Elizabeth Warren has called for. It doesn't go as far as Bernie Sanders, so he's kind of in between those two. But he's basically saying he would support a plan to forgive $50,000 for anyone who owes student debt in the U.S. So Elizabeth Warren has called for doing that as well, but she would scale back the forgiveness amount for people who earn over $100,000. Whereas he's saying, Wayne Johnson is saying, regardless of how much you earn, you could be a doctor, Under his plan, anyone with a federal student loan would have up to $50,000 canceled right then and there. And so Sanders has said he would forgive all student debt. So he doesn't go quite that far. But this amounts to about $850 billion by his math. $850 billion of the $1.5 trillion in student debt outstanding that would immediately be wiped out if he could get this passed through Congress.
Is this part of Mr. Johnson's intent to get the government out of the student loan business?
Yes, this is the thing. He's on board with this plan that has previously only been backed really by the Democratic side of things to cancel student debt. But the flip side is he says, look, if we do this now, you know, this has to be part of a broader plan where the government doesn't make what he considers big mistakes that the government's made in recent years in making student loans. His argument is that, this should be a one-time thing and then the government should stop making student loans or at least severely scale back its lending program so that it doesn't end up in the same position 5 or 10 years from now. So, you know, another part of his plank, for example, is for prospective students, he would provide a $50,000 credit or a grant that would not have to be repaid to pay for college. And, you know, right now there's a grant program called Pell Grants, so he would keep that in place. But that program currently only is for people who are of low or modest income to help pay for tuition. He would essentially say, on top of that, anyone who's anyone, regardless of your family background, will get a $50,000 grant over 4 years. So it would be total over 4 years to pay for college. And then if there's anything after that, you know, if that doesn't cover expenses at the college of your choice, then you'd have to either borrow from a private lender without the federal backing, or you would have to dip into, you know, your family wealth if you have some, to pay for college. So, you know, that part of the equation, you know, it's kind of a mix of Democratic and Republican ideas. The Democratic idea, I'm sure a lot of Democrats would probably like this idea of boosting grants, but when you start getting into discussing after a certain level of grants, you have to go to the private market. I think, you know, that's more of a Republican plan to turn to private lenders. And I think a lot of Democrats would contend that that's probably a dangerous idea. So that's where, you know, he's kind of a hybrid right here.
Yeah. What kind of political hurdles does he face, Josh? Isn't student debt forgiveness unpopular among Republicans in general?
Yeah, so the WSJ NBC News poll that came out in September, we actually asked this question, which is how do people feel about various different types of college plans? One of the questions was, are you in favor of immediate and full student debt cancellation? Only 41% of the overall public who responded to that survey said that they were in favor of that. And among Republicans, it was 16%. So this is very unpopular. If you just ask Republicans how they feel about total debt cancellation without asking anything else, they're very much opposed to that. And among independents, the support level was only 36%. Just by comparison, 63% of Democrats are in favor of full debt cancellation. So I asked Johnson how would he get around this, because he is going to be running as a Republican for this seat. And he said that, you know, he wants to address the concerns of equity by not just forgiving people with not just forgiving current student debt, but he would provide a $50,000 tax credit for people who have already paid down student debt over the past 10 years. So let's say that you spent your own money to pay off a $30,000 student debt tab, and now you no longer have student debt. Well, he wants to address those people who might say, look, this is unfair. I paid my way. What about me? He wants to give them a tax credit so that they would be reimbursed for their expenses. And he says he would pay for this through a new corporate tax, which, again, you know, this is a very unorthodox Republican position. And I think even he would concede, you know, this might be an uphill climb for him to try and get this Senate seat. But he said that he has tried to put together a package that would address various concerns. This would be a costly proposal, and it would be costly in terms of just the total amount of dollars that he would have to come up with to pay for this compared to some of these other plans. But he says that he thinks he could appeal to enough different constituents to get this through. I think the more interesting thing here is, you know, the reason why I wrote this story, there's going to be a lot of people who are vying for this Senate seat. I think what's interesting here is that, you know, he was the guy that the Trump administration turned to oversee the student loan portfolio. And he says he's going to run as a Republican. So given his position of having had a front row seat to the student loan program, and now he's coming out and saying we need to forgive student debt, I think this really does add an interesting voice to the conversation.
Wall Street Journal reporter Josh Mitchell joining us from Washington. Thanks, Josh.
Sure. Thank you.
Women who work in healthcare occupy most of the entry-level jobs, but they found that the first rung of the ladder remains broken. As part of the Wall Street Journal's Women in the Workplace series, we spoke with the journal's Lauren Weber about why it's so difficult to land that first managerial job. Lauren, there are lots and lots of women working in the healthcare sector. The healthcare services industry has the highest share of women working in entry-level roles, according to LeanIn.org and McKinsey. But women are sorely underrepresented in the C-suite. Let's go over some numbers first. Contrast for us the percentages of women in entry-level healthcare jobs with those in top positions.
Sure. So this data comes from a survey that McKinsey and LeanIn did with a couple dozen companies in the healthcare services industry. They found that women occupy about 75% of all entry-level jobs, and yet only 33% of all C-suite jobs. Now, obviously, for men, it's the reverse. Men are about 25% of entry-level roles, and yet by the time you get to the C-suite, men occupy about 67% of those jobs.
Why is this? Is there a pipeline issue for women in healthcare the same way there is in other industries like the military?
Well, there are a lot of different factors at play, of course. One is that it seems that companies don't have a lot of leadership development programs to help women move from a lot of those entry-level jobs up the corporate ladder. Now, we know also from the McKinsey and LeanIn data that the leadership funnel starts contracting in that first step from frontline worker, basically, to the first management job. And then it gets increasingly narrow as you go up the pyramid. And so, you know, getting that first promotion into management is critical. Now, companies, I think, are, some of them anyway, are starting to get the message that if you want to develop your talent and you have this great pool, huge pool of women at the bottom, then one way to help do that is to create leadership development programs. Now, part of the problem is that a lot of the women in healthcare in those entry-level jobs, in many cases, those are jobs with very little upward mobility. So there isn't necessarily a natural path to management. That's why companies really have to be intentional about it.
Can education help with that, or is education a barrier in itself?
Education can both help and is a barrier. In order to get a lot of management jobs in the healthcare sector, there are advanced degrees that are frequently required. It might be a master's in health administration, master's in public health. Women, especially those with lower paying jobs, don't necessarily have the resources. I mean, anybody in a lower paying job, but since in healthcare, so many of those jobs are occupied by women, don't necessarily have the money to pay the tuition, along with the, you know, there are challenges related to flexibility, transportation, childcare, all those issues that prevent people from getting higher degrees. Now, men are more likely to get those advanced degrees, which then put them on the management path.
You quote someone at McKinsey as saying companies have a stake in changing the status quo.
Yeah, and that has a lot to do with the business case for improving representation, of particularly of women in the healthcare management ranks. Women make the majority of healthcare decisions, and they're also the majority of patients. So when you think about who's going to be using your services, who's going to be using your products, it's important to have women participating in shaping those services and products.
There's a company based in Hartford, Connecticut called CareCentrix, and it has started a women's network. Talk about this.
Yeah, I spoke to a few women at CareCentrix. It's a company that administers home health benefits, basically, helping people get care at home after they leave the hospital or other medical facilities. And it's a company with about 2,300 people. And they their numbers run counter to the trend here. They have about 68% of all of their managers are women. Now, part of that is, like I said, a kind of an intentional effort to pay attention to these issues. A few years ago, a few of the women in the organization created a women's network, an employee resource group, basically. And they help facilitate networking events and opportunities to sit down with the CEO and other executives. And as several of the women told me, that kind of FaceTime is really important.
Wall Street Journal reporter Lauren Weber, thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me.
And starting on Friday, Walmart will start advertising holiday discounts online nearly a week before Halloween. Items like electronics and toys will be on sale. The Wall Street Journal's Sarah Nassauer on why holiday deals are creeping earlier into October.
So retailers could make more money because the holiday season this year is shorter by about a week compared to last year. And if you by holiday season, I mean the time between Thanksgiving and Christmas when people traditionally in the olden days would think about doing shopping. That has already been creeping earlier and earlier, closer to Halloween. But this year, Walmart says they're going to start the deals this week. And it should be said that it doesn't mean that these are necessarily the best prices or that they weren't offering low prices this time of year in years past. However, what's different is them really saying online, at least, this is only online, they're going to flag to shoppers, hey, start thinking about Christmas shopping, start thinking about winter holiday shopping.
It'll start to feel like Christmas sooner at Walmart.com. And that's what's news for this Thursday morning. I'm Charlie Turner for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.